You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the NL West. I am Allison Sutter from MLB.com. And as we look at the NL West division in the post-trade deadline week, we see that the Dodgers shored up their pitching staff. They have to be feeling pretty good about things. They're a little bit worried about the offense, which has really gone away in many ways. So they're still trying to get the entire team at full strength at the same time. And, of course, the Giants, who you can never count out of anything, they are breathing down the Dodgers' necks. They made a very nice acquisition in adding Mike Leake to the starting rotation. It's a rotation that could always use a little bit of a boost. So, as usual, it's going to come down to the Dodgers and Giants in the NL West as we get into the final stretch of the baseball season. In our post-trade deadline conversation with Ken Gernick, covers the Dodgers for MLB.com. And Ken, now that the dust is settled and everybody knows where they're playing and the roster is set for now, let's talk about the two new pitchers. So they had good debuts, and Alex Wood and Matt Latos. What were your impressions of those two?
Yeah, they both pitched well in their first starts for the Dodgers. Don Mattingly sort of second-guessed himself for leaving Wood in for a seventh inning after he allowed only one run over six, and things kind of unraveled there in the seventh against the Phillies. But overall, I think they both gave them quality starts there, and that was what they're looking for. Solidify the fourth and fifth spots in the rotation. And right now, they got to worry more about their offense. They're not scoring. So that doesn't look like they're going to be making any major acquisitions to fix that. They're hoping that they get Justin Turner back next week, and that'll help. But Jock Peterson's not hitting, and Yasiel Puig's not hitting. So you got two of your outfielders really not contributing. So run production is now the problem.
Yeah, I was just kind of perusing through the headlines on the Dodgers website, and I mean, I feel like I keep up with this team pretty well, but I didn't realize how much Jock Peterson had been slumping. I mean, when he made the All-Star team, we said, you know, we realized it was for the home runs, not so much for the batting average, which was kind of low. But he's only had two home runs in the last 30 games, and over that stretch, a 165 average. So that's a pretty, you know, large sampling. How alarming is that to the Dodgers?
Yeah, very, because really, even in his minor league career, strikeouts were the real red flag. And he hasn't shown the ability to adjust here in the major leagues, and his slump really goes back into June, really. So he's... He's the true outcome type of guy. He's a walk, strikeout, or home run, and the home runs have stopped. So now he's a walk or strikeout. And Don Mattingly has tried to take pressure off him by dropping him down to the bottom of the order after he spent the first half of the season in a leadoff spot. But it hasn't helped yet. And so the reason he's still playing, the reason he's still in the major leagues is that defensively, at least, he hasn't let that part of his game go into the slump. And he still gives them great defense out in center field. And Don Mattingly said yesterday that as long as that continues, he doesn't see any reason to kind of mess with the team. As it is, they really like the defense. They're better up the middle than they've been in the last few years with Rollins at short and Kendrick at second. They're better behind the plate now, at least offensively, and a lot better defensively in center field. So it looks like Peterson will remain in the lineup as long as that defense is solid.
Here for my weekly chat with Chris Haft, covers the Giants. And Chris, you know, I wanted to start with just kind of general thoughts on the NL West race. We'll get to the trade deadline in a second, but you know, it's we knew it was going to be the Dodgers and Giants. It's I think a little bit more interesting than I was expecting when the season started, just because these are two teams that have had to deal with, like, major obstacles, flaws, injuries, whatever you want to call it, and have persevered. So, you know, when you look at the way the teams are constructed now, I mean, the way the Giants are, do you think that the Giants have enough to make a push for the division title? Do you think that the wild card is probably more in the cards for them like it was last year?
All of the above. I think they have what it takes to win the division, but you know, what's really hampered them, what's starting to hamper them are injuries. Of course, they start out the year without Jake Peavy and Matt Kane in the rotation. That was a big deal. But now they got them down, they have them back. Now you're starting to see, you know, a Joe Panik lead the lineup. You know, when Panik's, you know, when it's one guy or the other. And it's just they played with their real lineup, quote-unquote real lineup, very seldom this year. And that's a concern. So they may end up having to settle for a wild card, but I think as I've always said, you know, their best bet is to shoot for the division title, and then if they fall short of that, probably the wild card is within reach.
I was laughing, right? Because we recorded our last podcast like just before the deadline, which was probably kind of silly to try to do that, considering how much can change. And the conversation I had with you was basically like, Giants are probably going to, you know, stand pat. Maybe they'll get a sneak in there and maybe try to get a starting pitcher, but it's probably not. Anyway, of course they went out like, I don't know, I think it was like 3 hours after we talked and they got Mike Leake. That's a pretty big deal. I was very impressed with that. I thought, you know, this could be a difference maker. He's obviously needed in that rotation, but that's no small thing. Mike Leake's a pretty solid major league pitcher. What are your impressions of him?
Very solid. You're absolutely right. You know, he in his first game, he, you know, went 6 1/3 on a hot day, if I remember correctly, on a hot day in Arlington, Texas, and you know, it was a quality start. I think he'll continue to deliver those kinds of efforts is what they need because the aforementioned Mr. King, Mr. Peavy. Now, Peavy's pitched actually very well, but you know, it's going to be tough for him to go beyond six innings, just the way you know, he's been going. And Matt Cain's having trouble going beyond six innings. So they need somebody besides Madison Bumgarner and Chris Heston who can help give the bullpen a rest when it's their turn to pitch. And that's going to be one of the main factors that where Mike Leake you know, can help.
And not to gloss over the fact that Joe Panik is battling some injuries right now. So what's the like prognosis on him? I know that he just went on the DL, and it's a back issue, which is always a little bit alarming. How alarming is this to you?
It's a concern. They don't. They may not have that much of a drop off defensively with Adrianza playing second base, who's, you know, filling in for Joe. But offensively, Joe is just, you know, he helps things go from the top of the order. So they're going to miss him from that respect. And right now, there's no. We're supposed to find out later on today a little more about Joe's condition. Whether he's going to be ready to go after the 15 days, nobody knows at this point.
Corey, now that the deadline has passed, the dust has settled. As we talked about last week, the Padres were very quiet. I think that the whole baseball world was waiting for maybe them to let people know that they were willing to sell off a couple of pieces, and then they really didn't. So I wanted to ask you just about the players that had been involved in trade rumors. How is it for these guys? You know, you're around them. Obviously, they probably didn't want to talk about it a whole lot. But is it stressful for some of these guys when they're just waiting to hear what's going to happen?
Yeah, and I think it depends on the guy, really. I think generally, yes, if your name is out there and it's been mentioned a lot, you're a little bit leery of July 31st for obvious reasons. You know, I talked to Justin Upton in Miami the other day after the trade deadline passed, and he said, yeah, he was having a good time. He was out with some friends and was just sort of pragmatic about the whole thing, sort of like if it happened, it happened. I know Jed Jerko had some family in Miami, and they were just kind of hanging out at the hotel, but he mentioned him and his brother were checking Twitter, you know, kind of scrolling through that as the hours led up to the deadline. So I think each guy kind of dealt with it in his own way, and no one's probably going to come out and say they were extremely nervous or anxious about it. But I think a lot of guys watched what was happening with keen interest, and you know, at the end of the day, I think generally happy to remain in San Diego.
So the fact that the Padres opted to stay idle for the most part. Was it more of a, I mean, the thing is that they've been playing really well. I guess the worst thing that could happen for a general manager leading up to the deadline with an underachieving team is that they play like 500 and then, you know, for like 2 weeks and they don't know exactly what to do. But the Padres have really been winning. So do they believe that they could still make a push for this, or was it just more that the right deal wasn't out there for them, or was it a combination?
I think it was a combination of a lot of things. One, they have been playing better. They have been playing better. You know, since right before the All-Star break, and certainly since, I think that may have come into play. Even general manager AJ Preller said as much. I know they also had some other, they had some deals on the table and potential options to move guys. So, you know, as much as they say, hey, you know, we're standing pat, we're going to move forward with these guys, I think they could have very easily gone the other direction. I just think they didn't see enough value for their guys. Especially the guys with expiring contracts, free agents to be Justin Upton, Ian Kennedy, Joaquin Benoit, most notably, to make a deal. And, you know, kind of thinking that, hey, you know, if we move one of these guys and we sort of get a middling prospect, you know, we weaken ourselves right now. And, you know, these games still count, you know. I mean, you know, certainly mathematically they're not out of anything. But, you know, one good example the other night, Allison, was Will Venable. You know, he's an outfielder. He's been playing a lot more lately since Will Myers has been hurt, but he may be like a bench piece, a left-handed batter that can help a team. So let's say you trade him and you get sort of a middling prospect back, nothing special. Well, you know, Will Venable helped them win a game in Miami the other day by tracking down this long fly ball in center field with guys on base and saved a run, maybe saved two runs. So he helped you win a game here and now. You have no idea what this smaller prospect is going to do for you. So it's kind of a balancing act, weighing how the team's playing now, weighing the return value on some of these players, and I think they just decided that there was nothing quite compelling enough to make a deal on.
Let's talk about some of the guys that are on the team. We did hear Andrew Pastor's name come up as, you know, it's kind of an unusual a trade chip because it's a young pitcher who's under club control, which usually means, you know, that you don't want to get rid of those guys. But anyway, he had a very good outing recently after a bad one. So how encouraging was that, his most recent outing?
Yeah, and I think, yeah, it's very encouraging. And I think, you know, these guys are under control. A handful of these guys are for the foreseeable future. And, you know, if you go ahead and move one of these guys, Allison, you got to go about the task of trying to replace them, and they don't have a whole lot of minor league surplus at the top levels of their system right now to just plug in holes or move guys up from AAA or AA. You know, with these recent trades that they've made, going back, I shouldn't say recent, but, you know, in December, you know, they moved some surplus guys who could certainly help them. Joe Ross is now with the Nationals. Matt Whistler is with the Braves. So, you know, yeah, you may be able to recoup some nice pieces for Andrew Cashner or Tyson Ross, but you still got to find someone to fill his spots and try and start these major league games in 2015. So, and you know, the other thing too is, you know, I read a lot of stuff about how, you know, these guys, the value of some of these players now won't be nearly as high as it was in this coming off season as it was before July 31st. And yeah, that's true with some guys, but I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think you could still move Craig Kimbrel in the deal if you wanted to. I think you could move Cashner or Ross. And certainly it would give the Padres a little bit more time to digest and discuss, you know, potential options without an expiring clock on July 31st, you know. So I think this doesn't mean they're going to hang on all these guys moving into 2016, but they're going to hang on to it for now.
Your team was just in Houston. I'm sorry that I missed you, but I was reading up on everything. It looked like things were going to go pretty well. The Diamondbacks took the first game from the Astros, but then lost the next two. And Chip Hale had some interesting comments after the last game on Sunday, just really questioning the energy level of the team. Is this a kind of a dog days of summer thing, or would this be sort of playing uninspired baseball? What's going on with the Diamondbacks?
You know, Allison, I think it's anybody that's been around baseball for a while knows that I think it was just frustration talking, because if you watch baseball, you know that when a team is not hitting, they have a tendency to look lifeless. And the Diamondbacks, after winning the first game of that series, it was six straight wins. It was their first six-game winning streak since 2011. And then they ran into two pretty good pitchers in Dallas Keuchel and Colin McHugh. And they just they didn't hit. And when you don't hit and there's not a lot of action on the bases, it tends to look like you're playing without life. And I think Chip Hale was frustrated by the way the game turned out. And I think maybe that was more frustration than anything, speaking with him after the game. You know, you talk to some of the players, and they didn't sense that there was a lack of energy, but just some pretty good pitching on the part of the Astros in those final two games of the series.
Yeah, I always wonder about that whole, like, they look like they're not playing with any energy kind of philosophy. It's very hard. I mean, in basketball, you know, guys are running constantly, and so you can tell if they look sluggish. Football, it's an action sport. I mean, you're going to get killed if you have low energy. But in baseball, it's like, I mean, the pitcher's pitching and the hitter's hitting, but, like, the fielders are largely, you know, they're getting their set positions, and as soon as there's contact made, they're on the move. But there is a lot of in-between time where they're standing there. And I never really understood. I mean, it's like, I felt like when fans say it, it's just kind of like maybe because they can't think of any other reason why their team isn't very good. But Hale, I mean, he would actually be able to sort of get a feeling in the dugout and sort of get a feel for what's going on around him. So I guess there's a little more legitimacy when it comes to that.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess that's a fair point that maybe he didn't like what he saw in the dugout. It just seems like it's always such a hard thing to judge when you're not hitting because, you know, then there's just not a lot of action on the base paths and you got guys striking out, and it's just it can look like you're lifeless. But you know, the Astros team's a pretty good team, and especially at home, and Keuchel and McHugh have been a pretty potent 1-2 punch for them.
Yeah, and so I found this interesting that Tomas was recently pulled for what seems to be a lack of hustle. So I was trying to read the description. So basically he hit the grounder, and then he sort of jogged out of the box and then turned away. Like, the play was made. I mean, it wasn't like there was an error or anything. The play was made, but he wasn't even, like, halfway down the line, and he already turned away to go back to the dugout. Is that what happened?
Yeah, he had a tap at a first base and just kind of started to jog down the line, and the first baseman stepped on first base, and he stopped running and turned back towards the dugout. It didn't seem overly egregious, you know, watching it happen at the time. But apparently it was something Chip Hale wanted to send a message about, although not through the media, because post-game he wouldn't say that's why he took him out. He said they was going to keep that in the family. But that apparently was the reason. They didn't like the fact that he didn't run all the way through to the bag. So whatever message he delivered to Tomas when they met after the game was obviously received, because then on Sunday when he hit two grounders back to the pitcher's mound, he ran hard to first base the whole way both times, even though he was out easily in both cases.
I am chatting with my good friend and colleague Thomas Harding, covers the Rockies and all of the eventful things that have been happening to this team in recent times. And Thomas, let's start with the call-up of a homegrown pitcher. So top pick in the 2013 draft, Mr. John Gray. By the time this runs, he will have made this start. But as we're speaking now, he is about to make his debut. So how important is this for an organization, any organization, really, that calls up one of its own homegrown players, but especially the Rockies, seeing that this is how they're trying to build their organization?
Exactly. And, I mean, the debut is a great thing. It'll be and it's something that people will kind of focus on. But really, it's the 2 months of the season that he'll get to pitch, that he'll get to go through some ups and downs. And you know there will be some downs in the major leagues, but also get to show his talents. What you're looking at when you look at August and September, first in August, you're playing against regular lineups. Everybody you pitch against will be a regular lineup. In September, if you're going against a team that's not in the race, then who knows who you're facing. But if you're going against a team that's in the race, you're getting everything they have, all the matchups possible. So it really is a good way to accelerate the learning curve. With Gray here and Eddie Butler already here, and he came back from the minors a much better pitcher than he was when he was sent down, you start looking and you start thinking, gee, you know, let's see what the future rotation looks like. Can those two be a part of it at the start of next season? And you start putting together various other things, like Jeff Hoffman from the Tulowitzki trade. Will he be ready next year? And you can have something to look at and dream of a little bit. I mean, let's face it, the last month or so, it's been who is not going to be here, and when are the Rockies going to get to their future? So they're starting to get there, and that's something to look forward to in August and September.
Thank you for listening to MLB.com Extras, the NL West.